I'm David Liggett with Data Center Hawk, and I am very excited to be sitting with Sean Maskell. Sean is the president and general manager of CoLogix Canada. And we're actually in Austin, Texas, which is funny, but thanks so much for being here, Sean. Excited to get to talk to you.
Thanks for having me, David. It's great to finally meet you in person,
yeah,
especially
you bet.
Down in Austin. We're here for our sales kickoff.
Absolutely. You've been at CoLogix now for a while, and I mean that in a good way. You've had the ability to see the company from, you know, really its roots to where it is today. But talk about just how you found yourself in this role,
yeah,
and what you're, you know, you spend your time doing.
Yeah, I mean, it's a super interesting question. It's a big question.
Yeah, sure.
That we probably wouldn't have time to touch on most of it. But I really fell into this role, and I often say to folks, being surrounded by the right people at the right time has been really part of the success in the journey. Out of college, I was looking for a role in policing. That's really where my eyes were focused on. Wanted to be a police officer.
What led to that? Did you think about that growing up?
I thought about that growing up, definitely.
Yeah.
Maybe it was not having to worry about picking out my clothes each day or whatever it might be, but maybe
sign me up for that.
You know, maybe just being a Canadian and having
sure.
a gun, which is not a normal thing for us up
sure.
there, you know, led to that as a child, but that's where I wanted to go with my role. Shortly after that, they changed to my requirements, and my eyes were well beyond the limit that you need without glasses to fit in to policing. So that quickly changed into a role driving an armored car for Brinks. And that's where I kind of laid my roots for a bit. And I was doing that for about 2 years, working at nights. Great job.
Yeah.
I mean, great people. Lots of fun. I mean, lots of interesting stories of sleeping on money, leaving money, finding it again every time. But that's a different story on its own. And family friend of mine, his name was Ray. He was always in the telecommunications business. He had a family that was in telecommunications. He was one of the first folks to start a business when long distance started to become deregulatized. That would have been probably late 80s, and more companies were starting to offer 1010 calling and alternative long distance packages. And he asked me if I could help him on a project that he was working on during the day. And I was like, for sure, I'm working night shift. I'll get up in the day, come down. I'm always excited to make a few extra bucks.
Sure.
So I went down there and he said, project number one, we've got these bins, and they just looked like bins of garbage to me, but they had these black boxes in there, and they were called Mitel auto dialers. You might not remember them, probably way too young. But he said, we have to package these up, we're gonna test them, package them, and they get shipped offshore. No idea how a phone call got from one spot to the other.
Sure.
That was like magic to me, but I learned a lot from him over the years, but I still never forget when somebody tells me something's tested, I always roll back to the story, and that's why I'm going to tell you, because I said to him, how do we test them? And he reaches into the bin and he grabs one of them and he shakes it. And he's like, you hear that? And I was like, I didn't. He's like, it's a good one. Put it in the box. Put it in the box. And we went through. So I often recall the shake test every time everybody tells me that it works. Soon enough, we'd get to one. There's stuff rolling around. That went in the garbage. And that was really the start into an infrastructure world for me. We're testing these auto dialers, shipping them off. I was doing that in the morning. A few other projects here and there, and quickly started to realize that there might be something more for me. I was interested in it. I was starting to learn a little bit more about telecommunications across Canada, how calls were moving from one spot to the other. And he asked me to join him full time, and we started an infrastructure business where we would take out of service telecommunications assets, repackage them, clean them up, and resell them to companies that weren't quite at that level. So, quick story, if you think about DMS switches, which drove most of our long distance and local calling, when there was a new feature that came out in a DMS switch, so if you went from call waiting to visual call waiting, it wasn't just a software upgrade like we would do today, wake up in the morning, it's done. The cards would come out, they'd get thrown away, Nortel would throw a new stack in there, and you had visual call waiting. What quickly was apparent was there's lots of companies across Canada that weren't at visual call waiting, they were just getting to call waiting. So finding those folks, making roots with them, and reselling equipment that came out, either that was purchased when it came out from telecommunications companies, such as Sprint Canada and others, or through consignment agreements, that opened up this world of selling. And that's really where my roots started in, and just moving across companies in Canada, knocking on the door, seeing what they were looking to buy, and understanding more about the business. What was really interesting was, over the years, I would say a good portion, probably 60% of the companies that we were dealing with were located in these three buildings across Canada. Mm. And it was fascinating to me. We're at 151 Front Street, mm-hmm. which we call Cologix, sure. Tour 1. Yep. With 555 West Hastings in Vancouver, mm-hmm. which we call our Van 1. And then in Montreal 3 at 1250 René Lévesque. These were carrier hotels, which I had no idea sure. really what that meant.
Well,
at
most
the time.
People didn't, but yeah, that makes sense.
But they were interesting places. I mean, filled with older guys with baseball hats, ponytails. You could still smoke cigarettes in there at the time, and just tons and tons of copper cabling. But yeah. it was fascinating to me. And
that's great.
I really fell in love with it. And over the years, Ray and I worked on that business. It was going quite well, grew fast across Canada, probably for about 5 or 6 years. That would have taken us right into around maybe the year 2000.
Yeah.
And at that point, Ray had also been an early adopter in co-location, part of a business that yep. had co-location facilities in Buffalo, New York, and Toronto.
Okay.
He exited that business, and luck would have it, he took a chance on me and said, hey, would you be interested in starting a co-location company here in Toronto at 151 Front Street, see if we can make a go of it. And we did. We started a business called Telehouse Canada
sure.
with some great partners and friends still to this day through Ray and George and Mark and Matt. Again, I learned a ton from these guys.
Yeah.
And they took a chance on me to bring some passion yeah. and bring some energy and grow it. And we did.
Yep.
I would say over the next probably 5 to 7 years, we became the fastest growing carrier neutral co-location facility in 151 Front, with expansions going to what we call now our Tour 2 and Tour 3 locations. We had expanded into Vancouver with Van 1 and looking towards Van 2. That would have been in 2010 timeframe. 2010, bumped into a gentleman named Grant Van Royen,
sure.
was just putting together Cologix yep. platform business, interested in interconnection, carrier hotels, and expanding in the Canadian market. So we had a couple conversations. He said, hey, if you've got a good little business going on here, would you mind if I came up and see you again? So there's a courtship that probably
sure.
happened over a period of maybe 12 to 18 months,
yeah.
quite a long time. And then in 2012, he acquired the Cologix,
sure.
the Telehouse business at that time, which became Cologix's Toronto and Vancouver facilities. And that was about a week just after Montreal was acquired from Canix at
okay.
the time. So that was the Canadian,
so that was the beginning
that
of
was
Cologix
the beginning.
And
correct.
You know, with the Canadian assets and I guess a few assets
Canadian
in the
assets,
US.
Dallas came first.
Okay.
Dallas, Minneapolis.
Yes.
And then quickly after that came Montreal, Toronto, Vancouver.
And interconnection was the strategy, right?
Interconnection was the strategy. Yeah. It was at the center of the core was
okay, sure.
interconnection.
Yeah.
Find those major crossroads of interconnection. It's the underpinning of our business. It still is today,
sure.
really. It's
yeah.
the foundation
yeah.
that everything else
yep.
is still built on
yeah.
today.
Okay, so that's when Cologix was really started and formed. Obviously, your focus has been growing the Canadian business.
Correct.
But talk about today, what the Canadian business is like. Like, obviously, it's more than just 3 or 4 facilities.
Yes,
so just talk
is.
About the growth that's happened and where the
yeah.
business is today.
I think when I look at the Canadian business, you know, it's grown in different stages.
Okay.
And I think when Cologix was formed, stage one, lock down the interconnection crossroads, find those buildings that were on
yeah.
top of the fiber.
Yep.
And that was the focus.
Control them, yeah.
Control them.
Yep.
Mission accomplished in Canada through our three major metros there
yep.
in Vancouver, Toronto, and Montreal. So continue to grow those facilities was the focus over the years. How do we modernize where they were at? How do we get into a standard that Cologix was looking to have
yeah.
for reliability, you know,
yeah.
Scalability? Because a lot of these facilities were somewhat underloved, maybe a bit underfunded.
Sure.
So when I think about my own organization, our first suite that we had at 151 Front was an old office. It had a small little data room, 4 open post racks. It had a 10-ton air conditioner, 40 kilowatt UPS.
Yeah.
and we did make it work.
Yeah.
But again, they really needed some
it
love and some growth.
Well, and I think that's, you know, I think that points out that was the time in the industry where a lot of, I think, carrier hotels that were being bought were old office buildings that sat in a
correct.
Strategic location. And the other, and I think too, co-location companies were realizing what the opportunity was and putting a standard around efficiency and design and mechanical electrical systems. And once that got going, which sounded like it did, you know, it kind of birthed other facilities and customers coming in going, hey, this is a real business. Like these guys have their stuff together and we can put our infrastructure with them.
Yeah. And I think the challenge with the Carrier Hotel locations, if there would have been unlimited space and, you know, a reasonable dollar per square foot to grow in those, they would have continued to keep growing today.
Sure.
And that ecosystem would have sat there. Those buildings just weren't designed for the growth that we saw.
Sure.
So I think stage one did an amazing job locking down those facilities. Stage two was to focus on those and ensure that we're increasing our carrier presence within those facilities. But we quickly realized, and the Canadian market started to develop, enterprises that needed to be closer, right? Edge became sort of a buzzword. And how do people get closer, right? We had e-commerce was another buzzword that was running pretty fast and furious. So what that led to was an annex facility. How do we build an annex facility that's tied back to the Carrier Hotel that we can bring enterprises in, allow them to grow? So that led to what we have is Tor 2, which is about 2.8 kilometers away from Tor 1 in Toronto. In Vancouver, Van 2 was developed, probably another 2 kilometers away at 1050 West Pender. Etc. And Montreal already had a grouping of facilities. Mm-hmm. There were probably 6 facilities originally that were there. So we already had a bit of an annex footprint to work with in that market. So again, it was invest in those facilities, get them to a point and a level that we're comfortable putting enterprise grade clients into and continue to grow the business. So
and you mentioned that 2 kilometer range, but for those that might not be aware, talk about like just the importance and non-importance of physical distance. Like when you're building that building, was it important for it to be a specific distance close, or could it have been a lot further away, or at some point does that break the application and the value of what you're trying to build?
Yeah, I think at that time, distance was extremely important for a couple of reasons. One, people were still just comfortable with a Carrier Hotel. Even if they really didn't need that deep carrier presence, they were just like, well, we have to be at Tor 1. That's the location. It was just, it was a mindset thing.
Perception,
Perception was there. So if we could keep it close, it just felt a little more comfortable. Sure. I think the world had what we called back then more server huggers around. Yeah, they wanted to be able to come out of the enterprise office on Bay Street.
Yeah.
They wanted the IT team to walk a couple blocks down the street. Oh, there's the equipment.
Yeah.
We can
see
it, touch
it,
feel it. We know where it is. So it was a comfort level. Two, within reason, you want to be able to run on a single fiber without adding many regenerative optics in there or putting in long distance and long range optics. So having them in a tightly woven area helps for the infrastructure piece of the business.
Sure, that's interesting. When you think about, so let's think about the markets individually. Let's talk about, I'd love for you to hit on Montreal, Toronto, and Vancouver, and just your thoughts on what makes Montreal attractive to what kind of users, you know, Toronto and Vancouver, how do they differ from one another from your perspective?
I'd often say completely the same, but totally different.
Okay.
So, it's sort of like my brother and I always say, yeah, people like your streaming alike. I said, yes and no.
Yeah, sure.
But they're all different in their own way. Montreal specifically started to grow in a big way as cloud started to become, you know, introduced into the Canadian market, much more popular. You know, the hyperscalers were looking for, we have to quick to market. How do we get there? Third party co-location.
Yeah.
The natural choice seemed to be Montreal from a cost of power perspective.
Sure.
So Montreal has a very, you know, sustainable green story to tell on their power. It's the lowest priced power in the country, and hyperscalers typically went to third party folks who were offering that space to come to market. Now, they needed that in Toronto and they needed that somewhat in Vancouver, but Montreal all of a sudden became sort of this epicenter for
large growth,
multi-megawatts moving into that facility. And it was attracting folks from the US, it was attracting folks from Europe as well. And the province of Quebec and Hydro-Quebec ran really great marketing, targeted marketing initiatives towards infrastructure, IT, telecommunications to be there. And they did a great job of that. So it sort of grew on its own naturally there. Toronto, a bit different. Toronto's more, I would say, of an enterprise market. We needed cloud, but it really attracts. Toronto's the hub of all things finance across Canada. So that was insurance companies, mm-hmm. banks, et cetera, that needed to be there. But they also wanted to be close to the cloud. You know, everyone was starting on this initial cloud journey, looking for ways to modernize their stack, looking for ways to save dollars. And to do that, being cloud adjacent mm-hmm. or closely tethered to cloud on-ramps became extremely important. So Toronto grew that way, and Vancouver in the same, not as fast as it did initially. Mm-hmm. The Toronto markets and the Vancouver market were quicker to grow and scale than uh-huh. Vancouver. And it's interesting to see over the last 5 years how Vancouver has just become one of our fastest growing markets.
Yeah, and I think that highlights the, you know, some of the changes with certainly the hyperscale groups and the type of demand that they have in the market and can deliver in a market, you know, to a market like Montreal, it means one thing. To a market like Vancouver means another. And right. sometimes the 30 megawatt deals that might go to Montreal are 8 megawatt deals that go to Vancouver starting, That's you know, right. and then the market starts to mature from there.
That's
an
right.
interesting. Yeah. What do you think from your view of Canada, you know, across the board, what do you think are some of the challenges that the market faces as a whole? And it might be, hey, this market has this issue, or this one has this one, or it's across the region. But from your standpoint, what do you think are the challenges that the region faces?
Yeah, I mean, there's probably numerous, but to, you know, to highlight on a few, data sovereignty has become a really important part of the Canadian business and who deploys there. Canadian companies are looking for content to remain in Canada, but we're also seeing US companies, you know, European companies, global organizations that are looking to also place their Canadian delivery systems within Canada. One, to lower latency, or two, they may have data sovereignty requirements sure. as well that need to sit in there. So the challenge with that typically has been the crossroads of interconnection that run across Canada, for the most part, have always dipped down into the US
yes.
and come back up. So if you were to leave Toronto, the easiest route would have been to go down through the US, across the US, and then back up on the West Coast into Vancouver. Mm-hmm. So there's not a really robust system. That's been changing, and there's been lots of great strides to add capacity across there. So we've worked really hard to ensure that we can connect our Canadian markets and keep those interconnections sovereign in the Canadian
sure.
on Canadian soil, as well as adding sovereign routes that come in from Europe that land in Halifax and then move move west into Canada. And quite recently, over the last 3 years, our acquisition of a building in Vancouver, which we call Van 4, has the first subsea cable that lands in Canada that comes directly from Japan. So,
wow.
I mean, that will be also a new route that's going to be starting to light up, and that will connect Asia-Pac directly into Canada
sure.
without touching any other U.S. soil. So pretty exciting there. So that was definitely a big challenge and one that we see folks looking at. I think, too, is Canada is a very large country with really three major metros,
sure.
Montreal, Toronto, and Vancouver. Big challenge for us has been, how do we continue to keep up with the growth? You know, over the years, real estate prices continue to climb.
Yeah.
Land becomes harder to find. Interconnection in the ground to tether those facilities has also become maybe more scarce. And I don't want to use scarce as maybe is not the right word, but those who control that have been more protective
sure.
over their asset. They understand the value more so than what they did before with fiber, fiber in the ground. So, you know, we need to stay true to our underpinnings of carrier neutral, large interconnection facilities, tethered to secondary markets that are connecting, one, to annex facilities that we're putting enterprise-grade customers in that needed to connect to cloud on-ramps. But then through the acquisition, and a big changer for us in Canada was the acquisition of Colo D in Montreal in late 2018, early 2019. And that put us into what I would consider a multi-megawatt data center provider. So, you know, at that point, our business went in two directions, working still in tandem, but we have what we would consider our edge side, which we would put in our enterprises and other folks, and then our scale logics business, which would be that 1 megawatt and higher deal that would live in those two facilities.
Yeah, it's really a unique product offering. And what I mean by that is not many companies have been able to offer solutions at both ends. you know, because they might not have the history or didn't make the acquisition. And some of this is opportunistic, right? You could acquire a wholesale or a larger provider, and so it launches you into another business, where other groups have just chosen to focus on bigger companies, you know.
That's right.
So talk about just, and I know you did just a second ago, but I'd love for you to expand on it, the value of having the offering at both the interconnection level and the larger level.
Yeah, you know, I think we're stronger at an organization because we're offering sort of a full start to finish solution.
Yep.
Right? So we've got hyperscalers that can come in and deploy their workloads that need to be closer to the folks that are consuming that. And we also have those facilities in line and network. So when you think about cloud on-ramps in Canada, and maybe slightly over today, but over 75% of every cloud on-ramp lives within a Cologix facility across Canada. So proud number to throw out. But what that does is it attracts the hyperscalers to deliver more cloud on-ramps. AWS is just deploying a new node with us in Vancouver on the West Coast. But that attracts that ecosystem that needs to be around that cloud on-ramp. So carriers need to be close to that. You know, financial customers, government clients, you know, the enterprises need to be there. I often say, when you're looking to deploy your cloud strategy and modernization, Cologix enables you to be cloud adjacent. And once you become cloud adjacent, there's three big factors that I like to say happen. One, you're able to reduce your cost. You've got lots of choice. You're adjacent to those clouds to be able to pick that. You can use software-defined interconnection strategies that we offer through a Cologix Assets Marketplace that allow you to deliver one connection or a redundant connection to our platform and have a multi-cloud offering that you can control through a single pane of glass. Two, it reduces the latency, because we're actually putting you directly beside the cloud. When you think about latency specifically on cloud applications, it's become even more important to provide either those folks that are participating in the cloud that are either delivering the content or those that are using it. The better user experience comes as you reduce the latency.
Sure.
And I think as we continue to evolve in this world, you know, frustration levels, when something doesn't load nowadays, it's crazy. And
just watch my kids.
I'm going to roll back probably about 5 or 6 years, but I remember it was a big moment for me because I was watching my son and he was on a computer that we had just off the kitchen. And he was like, "Hey dad, like, you got come here and check this out." And which makes me nervous as is, because he's probably about 7 or 8 years old. And when you hear that, I don't know what he stumbled upon or what I'm going to walk in on. But sure enough, I went over his video and it was a Mac, so I had a nice rainbow spinning wheel. It was just going around. He's like, "What is happening?"
Yeah.
And I was like, "Oh, it's loading."
Yeah.
He's like, "Oh, okay." He's like, "Is there a problem?" I said, "I don't know." He's like, "How long do you think it's going to be?" I said, it might just snap out of it. It might not. It was interesting because I watched him. He spent probably about 12 to 15 seconds in front of there watching that rainbow wheel. He went outside, closed the back door, and he was on the trampoline.
Yeah.
Done. And I mean, that's the generation that's coming up,
that's right?
It has to be quick, it has to be available, and it has to be there when you want it. So by placing yourself directly adjacent to the cloud, we're helping save those issues. And I think lastly, but definitely important in the world we're in, it increases security. You've got connections within a secure environment. You're plugging directly into those locations versus using public IP or public fibers that are running out. So, you know, we're helping on the security aspect as well. So those seem like three big focuses for being what I consider to be in a Cologix data center. But again, it's the full product offering from network locations connected to cloud adjacent locations and multi-megawatt locations also connected that can handle hyperscaler, cloud, and compute, or a mixture of both, where a client comes in and says, "We need our network sitting as close as possible, but we've got some secondary systems that can go in an annex facility that may be at a lower price point connected to."
Well, you certainly had the opportunity to see the product change over time, and one of the last things that I like to do with people that we get to sit down with is just, especially people that have been in the industry, you know, the amount of time that you have, I guess what gets you excited about the years moving forward? I mean, you've got the tenure, you know, where you're shaking the things, you know, and think about like how much has changed.
Yeah.
And then two, I think like if you were talking to, so what gets you excited if you're talking to, you know, younger professionals about why this space is exciting, like what would you say? Like, what are the things that get you excited about the next, you know, 5 to 10 years in the space?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because I've been doing this for a while, and there's still not a day. I am an odd one, but most days I literally just bounce out of bed. I'm excited to get here.
Sure.
I'm excited to learn. I think it's been an absolute learning process for me.
Yeah.
And I think the teams that you're around make such a big difference.
Huh.
And the culture at CoLogix, one, internally through a together we win attitude and just doing the right thing for our customers and clients. I often say, you know, we're a customer first type organization. Mm-hmm. We really value that. The success of our customers is the success of us.
Sure.
And we just continue to try to make sure that we all understand that and we deliver that each day. So it's just exciting to be around great people.
Yeah.
But two, the technology and the growth. When you think you understand something and you've got it figured out, it's changed.
Yeah. Sure.
You know, I would say the co-location business for me might have reached a bit of a plateau. Cloud came out and changed everything.
Yeah.
For me, it was like a rebirth all of a sudden. Excited. Let's do this. How are we going to build it? How are we going to make this available to our customers? How do we get them excited about where their location needs to be? And conversely, and I think where we're heading now is into the next, you know, I guess we could use the term gold rush of AI, and it's just a whole new world has opened back up. And it's exciting to see how, one, we're going to add AI into our portfolio. It's not going to change our business. You know, we're not going to forget about where we came from and focus on AI, but we're going to add it on top of that strong foundation that we built to make sure that we still have a strong building and a strong offering. But it's exciting to see those deals coming online. Canadian market typically lags behind the US market. Could be 18 months, could be 24 months. On one hand, it makes it a bit easy to be a sales rep in the Canadian market because we just learn from lessons learned in the US and we put them in place in Canada.
Yeah.
But, you know, AI is starting to move in. Canada, when I think of Canada, and I'll answer the last part about someone entering the industry, but when I think of Canada, Canada is really an edge market.
Hmm.
That's the way I look at it. Canada is an edge market for the US, it's an edge market for Europe and the globe. And I think the content that needs to be pushed closer to the edge will just continue, and it's just going to compound at such a high rate that Canada is just going to continue to explode, and we're in a really good position for that. And AI is going to do the same. Maybe not so much in Canada for the epicenter of AI. So if you think about AI generation and the compute that's going on, Canada may not have that piece there, but all the information that it's creating and the content that needs to go to the users are going to fall into those edge markets, and we're sitting in a really good position to capture that.
Absolutely.
What I would say to someone coming in the industry, I mean, I could talk about it for days. I smile about it when I think about it. So when I spend time with someone and they're asking me about the industry, I'm like, I mean, get into it. Learn all you can, ask the right questions, go try to set up a data center tour. It's become one of these things now where the younger generation understands that these data centers exist, right? The clouds are not just floating around in the air. They live in these buildings across the country. So I often say, you know, go to a tour and get that. When I started in the business, when you tried to explain somebody what you did, no clue.
Sure.
Right? I would just say I work for the city, and they'd be like, oh, okay, that's cool. Because it was just too hard to explain. But now when you see data centers, people are like, that's amazing, right? And even the younger generation just understanding how, you know, cloud gaming is, you know, advancing and you know, how that communicates. It's absolutely fascinating. So I think definitely a good business to be in. And, you know, I would advise anybody to go take a tour, learn about it and be part of it, because it's ever changing. It's ever exciting. And to be quite honest with you, I think probably some of the best people I've ever met have been in this industry.
Yeah, there's some great people in our space. And I think, I mean, just to echo your comments, the days ahead are really exciting. And I think we've done this long enough now where you can really start to see that there's some things coming that I think we're pretty bullish about. And then I think we all know there's things coming that we don't know yet.
For sure.
And I think we're excited about those two. So
yeah, I'm excited to see what the future holds for for sure. I think,
absolutely.
Look at, not all of the new technologies, not all of the new organizations doing these are going to be winners.
Yep.
I mean, there's going to be some that are going to fall off and some that are going to rise to the top. And I think we're in a great position to align ourselves with that and just see what's next. It's exciting times. For
sure. Right on. Well, you're in Toronto. I'm in Dallas. It took us coming to Austin to do this. Yeah. So thank you for the time, and look forward to catching up with you again soon.
Of course, David.
Yeah,
thank you so much. Appreciate it.